Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on this Thursday, July the 5th. It's about 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Hope you had a wonderful 4th of July yesterday, and good to have you along. Wondering if you are the eldest child in your family, the firstborn, and are you now bragging about being smarter than your younger siblings following the release of a new study that found the eldest children in families tend to develop higher IQs than their siblings, 3 points higher than the closest sibling? Or are you the baby of the family, like me, who wants to argue about these findings? We're going to talk about whether this study really matters. Is this significant? And does this determine the success of someone or not? We will talk with a guest who has written the book The Pecking Order, who says that what really matters is family size, time and attention, and the financial resources available for the child. It's not strictly a matter of birth order. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dalton Conley, University Chair of Sociology at New York University. His essays have appeared in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and Salon, among other publications. He's the author of several books, including The Pecking Order, a bold new look at how family and society determine who we become. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
And I have an older copy of your book that I picked up at the library, and it's a hardcover, and that's that title or subtitle is Which Siblings Succeed and Why?
Yeah, more to the point, the hardcover title.
Yeah. What is your take on this new study that we're reading about in the papers?
I'm quite shocked that a scientific study published in the journal Science about this issue got so much play across the country, really, because there's been many, many studies about birth order, and they've generally been inconclusive. It is true that this study made some important advances. Number one, they had a huge sample size. They basically had every male in Norway born between certain years, and then they had them when they were adults, and they could link siblings to each other. So that was a big advance. Most previous studies had compared siblings from one family, you know, depending on what birth position they're in, to somebody in a different birth position in a different family. And they really couldn't rule out that there was just different dynamics in the different families. This study actually, it was a pair of studies, one published in Science and the other published in Intelligence, journal, psychology journal. One of the techniques they used was to look at compare brothers to each other, mm-hmm, within the same family. So that was a big advance. But as much as the firstborns among us want to say the case is closed and firstborns outperform their younger siblings, I think that there's still a lot of question marks.
Yeah. Why do you say you are surprised by how much play this has received? People like to read about this or talk about this. Whether birth order makes us smarter or makes us more successful, or what traits we must have because of where we were born in our family.
Right. I guess what surprised me was the fact that there's kind of a whole research industry on this topic, and papers are coming out all the time. And why this one, really generated such a large response across the country is interesting to me, particularly since it's not even based on United States data; it's based on Norway. So how much can we really apply what's going on in Norway to our situation? For example, Norway, a European country, recently developed from a feudal or farm economy where the norms and, in fact, laws of primogeniture, the passing on of your property to the firstborn male, just like the aristocracy did in much of Europe, that was a long tradition ingrained in Norway's history, and while that's not the law now, certainly that's probably still the culture to a certain extent that the firstborn male is favored. And we're a different country. We're a country of immigrants, a country of westward expansion and egalitarianism. And I don't think we have strong norms about passing on property only to the firstborn male here. And so that, I think that would color, that would make for very different cultural environments in the two countries. That's just one of the many limitations of that study.
So the fact that in Norway they pass on property to the firstborn and maybe the firstborn is favored in ways like this would attribute to the IQ being higher in the firstborn?
Yes, I think that you know, I don't think it's in this case it's the property per se, and I'm not sure they even still legally do pass it on to their firstborn disproportionately, but I think that that's an ingrained culture of valuing the firstborn male more than the other children, at least subconsciously, and I think that would affect how they socialize each kid. Now, does that matter? Yes, because one of the things they found, or at least argued for, was that the birth order effect was not biological. It didn't take place because of something in the womb, for example. It was social. And the way they showed that was that, or they purported to show that, was that when they looked at children, boys, who had an elder sibling who died as an infant, and therefore they were, you know, officially, in terms of their mom's reproductive history, they were a second born, but they were raised as if they were the eldest because the firstborn was no longer there, they had the same advantages as the firstborn. So that they concluded that it's not something like the sort of wear and tear on the uterus or anything like that. Uh-huh. There are a bunch of theories out there about that, that it really was something social in the family.
The good genes were taken first or something. So and what about those of us who were born after a long period of time, is that factored into this study?
I mean, it's not factored into this study. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, girls are not factored into this study.
Yeah, they say though that gender, it should be the same with women.
They assert that, but they can't show that. Because what they're working from is actually military data. There, because in Norway, like many European countries, everybody, all males, have to do national service in the military at age 18, I think it is, and therefore they have good records for them, which is good for us researchers. But they can only assert that it's the same for girls, but they didn't have the data to show that. So that there are many other factors, as you rightly point out, mm-hmm. that are either more important than birth order and or which interact with birth order. In other words, they kind of form a mix. So spacing that you mentioned is one of them. Mm-hmm. So having two kids, bang, 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 or three kids, bang, 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 in 4 years is quite a different family situation than having a kid waiting 5 years, having another kid, and then waiting 5 years and having another kid. In fact, one of the strongest birth order effects in other research has been shown that it's the last born sibling in large families that does quite well, off the charts well. And that's because they generally, there's a pattern where there's a big gap between the last born and the second to last born. And that age spacing makes a big difference. So they're kind of the last one to come along, but by the time they come along, they're not really competing with their pack of elder siblings. They are really getting the attention of very experienced parents by then. And, in fact, all these deputy parents, what I call the deputized parents, the much older siblings who teach them how to do things at a much earlier age and kind of help give them attention and dote on the baby of the family. So there's a case where, the last born is in the catbird seat, but only if there's a big spacing. So that's just one example of many with gender, with timing of divorce, with income changes, how all these things can completely flip birth order effects, for example.
Well, I'm happy to be in the catbird seat then, as the youngest of eight, but there was a big separation between me and my next older sibling. Tell us how what you did for your research for your book and how this new study either supports or contradicts what you have found.
Well, one concern with most previous research on birth order before before this study and before my study, was that they were really confusing birth order and family size. So if you just sort of picked firstborns from the population and you picked, let's say, thirdborns from the population, you know that the thirdborns come from a family of at least three, mm-hmm. if not more, and that the firstborns come from a family of maybe an only child, could be one of two, could be whatever, but on average they're probably going to be from smaller families than the families where you've picked one of the thirdborn or the secondborn or the fourthborn. So one strategy is to look at individuals in the same family and compare them to each other, and both my study did that and their study did that. And we had different outcomes and different measures in different countries. I used the United States Census, and they used these Norway military data, and they found that when they did the within-family comparison, the difference in IQ between first and second boys dropped from 3 to 2.3. So it was a little bit smaller when they did it that way. In my study, I found in families of two, when you limited the family size to two, there was absolutely no difference. Now, I wasn't looking at IQ. I was looking at how they performed in school and what kind of investments they got from their parents.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I could measure in the census. And those don't necessarily contradict each other.
Right.
It could be that their IQ measures one skill. It doesn't measure how able you are to focus and complete your homework on time, or how socially able you are and politically savvy you are in group situations, or how emotionally competent you are, emotional intelligence. So it could be that the firstborns are getting the uptick on the IQ, secondborns are getting the uptick on the emotional quotient, and then in terms of how you actually perform in school or in life, for that matter, it's a wash. So it's not necessarily that the two studies contradict each other, but I certainly did not find any concrete outcome differences between first and second borns in two kid families. What I found was interesting that when you go to three or more kids and you create, in a sense, a middle child, that's when you see birth order rear its head. That specifically, when the family transitions from two kids to three or more, that second child suffers. It goes from being second of two to a middle child. And I found that middle children disproportionately, and this is on average for all the middle children out there that are going to contradict me, but on average there's an effect where the middle child gets less investment from their parents, and they have greater academic risk of being held back, for example. Mm-hmm. So my study might actually help shed light on something quizzical in their study, and what they review is that before age 12, when they looked at the young kids, secondborns actually had an IQ advantage. And then when they looked at the adults, 19 years old, the firstborns had the advantage, and it essentially flipped. And what I would hypothesize is what they're detecting is not really a firstborn-secondborn effect, but really the transition to a middle child of that secondborn sibling. So maybe when they're young, their youngest sibling has just been born or is not born yet, when they're measuring the IQ at early childhood, but by the time they're adults, that second child is likely to have lived their childhood or a lot of their childhood as a middle child, and then you see the difference between the first and second. So I think you could reconcile the two studies.
We're talking with Dalton Conley. He is the chair of sociology at New York University, and he is the author of the book The Pecking Order. We are talking about which siblings succeed and why, and talking about the research that looks into birth order, and a new study that says that the eldest has a higher IQ than the next child. Wondering why all this matters and how this all contributes to whether someone succeeds or not. Our guest is saying that it's really a combination of many things. What matters is family size, time and attention, and the financial resources available for the child. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your questions about birth order and why it matters or what contributes to one sibling's success and the other's failure. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, Ben Marins is with you. After 4, Ben will talk with political scientist Joe Heim about current issues of the day, talking about current issues in American politics after 4 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking with Dalton Conley, who is author of The Pecking Order, Which Siblings Succeed and Why. The new title on the book is A Bold New Look at How Family and Society Determine Who We Become. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for him. Using this new study that's been in the news about firstborns in a family having higher IQs than subsequent children, but looking more broadly as to what that means and what sorts of family dynamics, what role they play in our success and who we become. Are you a firstborn, a middle child, the baby of the family? How do you think that has influenced what you have become and how you did in school or in life? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Dalton Conley, you're making the point that maybe we're too concerned about birth order. It's not the birth order so much that matters, but all these other factors.
Right. So there's definitely evidence, I think, that family size matters. And I mentioned that, well, the last born, like you, of a big family tend to do well, but most of the kids in the middle in a large family are at a disadvantage. That doesn't mean they're not going to overcome that, but it means that there's a disadvantage. And it just makes simple sense that when there's, you know, there's a pizza pie of parental attention and resources, everything from tutoring to literally money for college tuition or extracurriculars, and you have 8 kids, and you have to divide that pie into 8 slices, they're going to be smaller than if you just have 2 kids. So there's pretty good evidence on that front. It's how birth order particularly matters that is a little bit more questionable. Now, I ask students to do a game where pick, you know, 5 people or 10 people that you know well enough to have a sense of their personality, but not well enough that you actually know their family background or what birth order they were born in, and guess and then go ask them. And you have to limit yourself to people who are from 2 kid families, and you have a 50% chance of being right if they're firstborn or secondborn. So you throw them out if they're from a bigger family, but most of the students find that they're not doing better than flipping a coin, that it actually is kind of more like an astrological sign. It's not really predicting anything when they actually do a slightly scientific test for it. And, you know, we live in a complex society where one, you know, even if there are some slight personality differences between firstborns and secondborns that are really ballyhooed, they really shouldn't translate to real differences in success in life, because, you know, you can be the stereotypical intense firstborn and succeed, and, you know, at a detail-oriented or very task-oriented type A job, and or you can be the, you know, the stereotypical easygoing extroverted secondborn and succeed in sales and marketing. So there's just enough niches in life that even if there are these personality differences that people like to talk about, they shouldn't matter as long as you, quote, you know, find the color of your own parachute.
Yeah. How does this play into twins? How do twins pan out?
Okay. Actually, now you kind of caught me after saying birth order doesn't matter that much. In the one case where, ironically, it does matter in life outcomes, when birth order is really separated by a matter of, you know, 20 minutes or an hour or whatever the spacing is between twins, it turns out that birth order actually has a significant predictive power. And in fact, identical twins make a really nice experiment because we know that they're genetically the same, and we can measure things like their weight at birth and their birth order and see if that affected them many years later into adulthood. And what myself and other researchers find is that indeed, with twins, the firstborn, who's usually also the heaviest, those mm-hmm. both have important effects, is generally more successful on average than their lighter secondborn twin. Now, that's because the firstborn out of the mother's womb is probably the one who had the front seat, who had was closest to the placenta mm-hmm. and got more nutrients, therefore, probably is the heavier one of the two, therefore had more fetal development in utero and got out quicker. It's a biological thing. Secondborns in twin births or multiple births are often breech births, higher risk, or more likely to be cesarean, and are more likely to be lighter and not have gotten all the nutrients they needed. Mm-hmm. So there's a big effect. So, for example, in birth weight differences, the firstborns it's usually the heavier one, and a pound difference in birth weight, which is not uncommon between twins, can result on average in an inch of height difference, in a third of a year of schooling difference, and 7% of their lifetime earnings. So these are very big effects.
Interesting. All right.
Compared to the 2.3-point effect.
Lots of callers. We'll go first to Connie in Portage. Hi, Connie.
Hi, good morning. Good
morning.
I have sort of an interesting, I think, I'm proud of all five of my children, but how they've all graduated from college, but the oldest child had the highest IQ and never used her major, never went back. When she did work, she didn't work very much, so she has, thank God, a successful husband, so she doesn't have to work. But then the next one was a boy, and he's very particular and very, very disciplined and wonderful at his job. But the fourth child, the third one, is just sort of lackadaisical, but the fourth one is a girl who didn't get the straight A's like the rest of them, and she's making more money than any of them.
Mm.
Yes, and I thought that was so interesting, but she has the personality and the drive, and the baby does really, really well. So, but I thought in that order, they're all successful, but in a different way.
Yeah, I was going to say, you almost forgot that one right in the middle, Connie.
Well, I'm a middle child, and I was the most successful. My two sisters weren't too successful,
yeah.
But
yeah.
I was.
That very interesting, though, too. The fourth child wasn't necessarily the smartest on the IQ test or the grade or the report card, Dalton Conley, but maybe is the most successful of her family.
Right. That mm-hmm. just goes to show that there's a lot more than IQ that predicts how we turn out in terms of.
I didn't mean to forget that.
No. I was just teasing. You said that the middle child was
a
little lackadaisical.
Well, let me tell you about him. He's the artistic one. Mm-hmm. Sang in all the weddings and was in all the plays and still sings in a rock band. And but he's just happy with who he is. You know, he's not going to climb like the other ones are a little bit. The other two or three are more, they want to climb in their business, where the oldest girl and the third boy just happy with who they are.
Yeah. Any thoughts, reflections on this, Dalton Conley?
What's most amazing is that, how many kids did you say there were in total?
Five.
Mm-hmm. Five, that all five graduated college, which is in a country where 25% of the population gets a bachelor's degree, and in fact, if you have a bachelor's degree, your siblings probably is only 50% likely to have a bachelor's degree. That she's got a perfect hat trick of five.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just
she's a public radio listener too.
Yeah, right. Well, that's that's a very select sample of highly intelligent, motivated people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just testament to their family dynamics and parenting that she was able to shepherd five through the educational system so successfully.
Yeah, very interesting, Connie. Thanks very much. We talked a little bit about the Norway study that said that its findings should be the same for women as well as men. But we didn't talk about what you have found in terms of is there a difference between with gender, with whether you're going to succeed or not?
Well, I found two things with respect to gender. One is that what I call the Cinderella effect, and I discussed before how birth order can completely flip in some instances. Mentioned the last born with a big spacing, but another case is when there's a parental death or divorce or separation of some sort that leaves somewhere in the course of the kid's childhood one remaining parent. And in those cases, I find that the eldest born still at home, and this is particularly the case when it's a female child, when it's a girl, is at a great disadvantage. And that's because she ends up having to take on a lot of prematurely take on a lot of responsibility, parental responsibility. Everything from making the lunch boxes for the younger siblings, mm-hmm. to helping with their schoolwork, to even sweeping floors like Cinderella, or being an emotional support for the remaining parent. And unlike Cinderella, who had a fairy godmother and a magic pumpkin to rescue her, most people who get kind of sucked into this role don't escape so easily. So, yes, ideally, maybe that kind of precocious maturity and helping out around the house, an adult role might be a good training mechanism for succeeding in the world, but more often than not, these girls get trapped into that role of nurturing their younger siblings, and often when their younger siblings later on don't appreciate or even resent it, and they kind of launch or protect the success of their younger siblings at their own expenses. So that's one example of how gender matters and, in fact, interacts with birth order and the increasing divorce rate. Another example that I found was that in families where the mom never worked outside the home, a very traditional homemaker family, in those families, the brothers had a distinct advantage vis-a-vis their sisters. They had an advantage in terms of whether or not they were going to graduate from a four-year college, how much money they were going to end up accumulating, and so on. But in families where the mom did work outside the home, that difference was largely erased, so that there was gender equity between the brothers and the sisters. Now, that could be because they're in very different families with different values, or it could be the role model effect of the moms working outside, showing that that women are valuable outside the home, or what have you. So, I'm not going to get into the debate about whether overall it's better for the for kids for moms to stay home or not. The mommy wars, as they're called. I'm just sort of on the side noting that regardless of what it does to the averages for all kids, one effect is that it does reduce differences between the boys and the girls in the family.
Mike in Appleton is our next caller. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
For your guest here, I would suppose an important equation here is how do you measure success? In other words, what is success? On the other hand, looking at my family, eldest sibling, my sister, is incredibly intelligent, and I'm the last born. But measured on a success rate, it would seem to me that I have a lot of more practical qualities to going about life than she does. So, I suppose there are different types of intelligence, too. Thanks.
Yeah. Was it just the two of you, Mike? He went away. Anyway.
That's a good point that Mike makes. I think that, what I measured things like how far you went in school, how much money people earn, the prestige of their occupation, and how much wealth they accumulate. Those are four factors that are generally thought to be decent measures of what sociologists or economists call socioeconomic status. The reason why do I measure those things? Because they're easy to measure. you can ask somebody how far they went in school, and you can get a pretty straightforward answer, for example. Or you can look at their tax returns and find out how much money they made last year. No other reason than that. Not that I value economic success more than spiritual or psychological success. I just think it's easier to measure from a research point of view. It's very hard to know what's going on when you ask somebody something about their subjective happiness, for example. So for all I know, everything I describe could be the complete flip for measuring happiness or spiritual fulfillment or anything like that, which is a good point. It's just that I measure what I can be more sure of.
Yeah. We're talking with Dalton Conley, talking about birth order, family size, family dynamics, and how it can influence how successful we are in terms of how much education we get, what profession we are in, and how much money we make. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Dalton Conley calls it the pecking order in his book. We're talking with him and welcoming your questions for him about birth order type questions. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our discussion prompted by that recent study finding that the eldest children in family tend to develop higher IQs than their siblings. It's a big Norway study that is getting a lot of attention, and we thought it was a good opportunity for us to talk about the research into this area and whether birth order matters and what differences you see depending on where you are born in a family. Our guest says that what really matters is family size, time and attention, and financial resources available for the child. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. It's been nearly 2 years since Katrina flooded entire communities in Mississippi and Louisiana. After 9, Kathleen and her guest will discuss reconstruction efforts in a post-Katrina New Orleans. That's coming up in our next hour. Our next caller for Dalton Conley, author of The Pecking Order, also chair of sociology at New York University, is Barb in Black River. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm really finding this interesting. I did my graduate thesis on birth order and responsibility, and I'm also the oldest of five children, and all of my younger siblings are brothers, and we're all spaced about 2.5 years apart. I'm way overeducated than my brothers. Two of them have technical college degrees, which they went into as far as careers, and two of them have high school diplomas. I don't feel like I'm any more successful or any more intelligent, and I'm not really quite sure why education. I guess I liked school, and I knew that women were at a disadvantage in the work world, especially in the 70s, and I knew that I needed education to compete in the work world.
Yeah. So you have much more of an education than your brothers, but you don't think you're smarter or more successful than they are?
Oh, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. No. Dalton Conley?
All I can say is that this again illustrates that there's a lot more that goes into educational or any sort of socioeconomic success than just the IQ measure, so that we should take this 2.3-point difference from Norway with a very big hunk of salt, if you will.
Mm-hmm. I also have just one child, and he's 25, and only went to one semester of college and then decided this wasn't for him, and now he's making like $80,000, way more than his master's degree mother. and it's very charismatic and people-oriented and common sense, wants to start a business. So I'm not sure, but I find it very interesting, especially having all brothers.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the only girl in the family, Dalton Conley? She happens to be the eldest. Does that make any difference?
I have to know a lot more about exactly what happened. In terms of only children, like her son, the evidence is that, like I talked about, that pizza pie of parental attention and family resources, they've got the whole pie to themselves, and despite some of the stereotypes of being kind of unmotivated and underachieving or spoiled, that doesn't hold up in the actual outcomes that they demonstrate. On average, they actually do the best of any sort of birth position. So there's a lot of myths that need busting out there in this literature.
Yeah. Thank you, Barb. Dave in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Dave.
Uh, Yes, hello. I had a question. All three of my children are adopted.
Mm.
Is it the family order in our family, or do we need to go back and find out the order that where they are in the adopted family? They're all babies when we got them.
That's interesting. Adult and common?
Yeah, it would be this social order in your family. So it doesn't. There's no real biological effect unless one of them is a twin or something like that, or a triplet or higher order birth. If they're all singleton births, then any effects are going to be from your family dynamics. And of course you can. I talked about the middle child syndrome or the crunch in the middle, where they tend to get less attention and investment from their parents, and they're fighting a two-front war. The eldest and the youngest get to spend at least some of their childhood as an only child. The eldest for sure, the youngest assuming you can get the elder kids out eventually. And the middle children never experience that individual time. So one thing that parents can do is to pull those middle children out once and become aware of that dynamic and give them extra attention, you know, once a week having a special time with that kid one-on-one or making sure they don't get their homework doesn't get neglected, or that they are planning for college tuitions with the knowledge that that kid is going to be the one that's going to for sure overlap with probably the whole time they're in college with another kid. So, you know, once parents are aware of this, that's what the point of my book was, just to make families aware of these dynamics, that they can compensate for them and make them go away. So with adopted kids, of course, assuming they're not siblings themselves, there's so many other factors that are going to come into play to generate difference. That birth order is probably going to be a relatively trivial one compared to the genetic differences between them. There might be racial differences, and so they'll be treated very differently in society at large or their schools, and so on. So adoption sort of raises a whole new can of worms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks very much, Dave. Patty in Saner. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wondered, and the previous two callers sort of support my curiosity, what these studies become, when they reach the popular media, they become very watered down to sort of these really simple, jargony kind of principles like middle child syndrome and that sort of thing. And I just wondered what effect sociologists expect these kinds of things to have on society. Do you expect there to be, is that a negative, that people will get these kind of amateurish impressions of what is being is what is being written about in a much more sophisticated way? They'll never read the science article or whatever. And does that have a negative effect on families?
That's a good meta question. I'm not sure how to answer that. I think that largely I'm always in favor of more information, and so that the studies continue and each one is incremental advance over the others that came before it. I think that's good. How the public deals with it, well, largely that's beyond the control of the scientists. They, you know, they do a decent study, or I do a decent study and publish it in a peer-reviewed journal or in a book, and it comes out. And then you can't really control how it's interpreted or what's done with it, you know, except for coming on the radio and explaining that these are not big effects, or that you can do something to change them. You know, that's the kind of outreach part of it. But, for example, I haven't talked about, as you said, the technical details of their study for the most part, or my study about how I separated out family size effects from birth order effects. So you're right, but I'm not sure how important those details are to the debate. I think what's more important is that parents do acknowledge that there are inequities within families. So that's one of my agenda is mm-hmm. to just make people aware that, yes, we love all our kids infinitely and equally, but in fact sometimes that infinite love can mask behavior patterns that are not individual choices but are part of the social structure of the family that generate difference. And there's an enormous amount of difference in American society between siblings from the same family of origin. The proverbial Bill and Roger Clintons are not necessarily exceptional. I mean, that case obviously is pretty extreme, but one sibling being successful and another being not so successful, particularly for families that have limited resources, is quite the norm in America. The caller who had five kids to all graduate mm-hmm. from college is the exception. So this is the family is hardly just this haven from a harsh world in the dog-eat-dog style of American capitalism. That the family is part and parcel of that system and creates its own inequalities. And to the extent that we become aware of them in a not oversimplified view of birth order, for example, I think that we can mitigate them and give each kid a fair shake. We're concerned about racial differences in equality of opportunity or equality of treatment. Why shouldn't we be concerned about differences based on different positions in the family or other or gender within the family, for example? But we're a little bit more blind to them because they're happening within a given family.
Yeah. Thank you, Patty, for the call. Ken in Bailey's Harbor. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. I certainly support your thesis that the resources available to the family is really, really important, maybe more important than birth order. In my case, I was born at the end of the Depression, and my brother and sister really had more resources available to them than I had. As my family's economic situation improved coming out of the Depression. And my sister, for example, had piano lessons, which I wasn't able to have, that sort of thing. Yeah. So I really believe that we're really talking about resource allocation here.
Yeah. Dalton Conley?
Exactly. And opportunities, the Depression's a great example. There's really a three-level chessboard, if you will, a three-dimensional chessboard. And at the bottom level, you've got the individual. Certain individuals have certain talents, and other individuals in the family have other talents. How those talents are nurtured by the family matters, and then how they're valued in society matters. So let me give you an example of a family that I studied and interviewed, where one sister was a musical prodigy. We assume this is probably genetic or whatever. It's innate that, by age four, she was able to play instruments at a very high level. She became the star of her family. And the other sister kind of was the tag-along to go to her recitals. And, I wasn't neglected, but wasn't getting the kind of attention and rewards and support that the family, they worked extra jobs to send her to conservatory, and so on. So she had a good fit between her individual talents and the values of the family. They valued her talents, the musical prodigy. Another family might have had a hockey star, but they were math professors and thought hockey wasn't worth mm-hmm. nurturing and mm-hmm. never paid for lessons, and that could have gone to waste. So, but in this case, it was nurtured. But then we move to the third level of the chessboard, and that's society. And in this case, music is what we call a winner-take-all market. So, there are very few seats in the major philharmonic orchestras in the United States. There's very few jobs, just like the NBA. There's how many teams are there now? 28, with 16 players per team. If you there's a very limited job market, and in this case, it ended up that while there was a good fit between her skills and her family's values, there was a bad fit between her skills, her family values on the one hand, and what society rewards on the other. So she went through conservatory, but she never got to be a major figure because it's a highly competitive industry with very few rewards. And so she teaches piano and violin to, third graders and is struggling to get by after all that parental investment. And the so-called neglected kid who went into computer science ended up doing quite well. So you can never tell. Another example of this would be the caller mentioned the Depression. Vietnam, in our interviews, caused a lot of sibling differences between boys, and their birth order mattered incredibly, but it could go either direction. You were born at the right age to be drafted and sent to Vietnam. That affected your life in one way versus your younger brother who was too young at the time, or flip that around and say, you were the right age, but your older brother was too old to get drafted and didn't get that experience, or you came of age before the person personal computer revolution, or and another sibling came of age after it and had an incredible different skill set and opportunity. So society is changing as we speak, and that can generate these kind of differences as well.
Interesting email from Katie in Madison. My brother and I are very close together, just two of us, and I'm the younger. I felt like my parents had a while we're at it attitude, meaning let's have them close together so we can do two at once. I feel I benefited from this situation because I got to do everything more quickly. When my brother did it, I did it, including a famous family story about potty training. Any thoughts on this? Two children close together and differences or
right.
advantages that might have?
My kids are 18 months apart, so I know what she's talking
yeah.
about. And there's advantages and disadvantages. I mean, in general, I have to say, as much as I was in the get it over with camp, I don't want to live my entire life in diapers.
Mm-hmm.
For the kids, having spacing is generally better, the larger the spacing. I mean, to at least within a 5-year window.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem like an advantage that, you know, you can read the same storybook at bedtime if they're a year apart, or you can do similar activities. But the competition and differentiation between them, is accentuated when they're closer together, and there's less individual attention, again, because they're spending less time as an only child at the beginning or the end of their childhood, respectively. So, of course, we can. These are factors that are averages and that can be overcome. And especially when we're aware of the risks, hopefully we compensate for them.
Yeah, Dan in Winona, Minnesota. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. That's a great program. Just an observation: we have 6 kids in our family. I'm the oldest, went to engineering school, undergrad, and graduate school for an MBA. All the siblings graduated. My youngest sister is 22 years younger and academically did better than all of us. So I think that's pretty interesting. And the other anecdote is food. When we were growing up, my dad was starting a business, and we got all our beef from the farm for the first 3 kids, and we're all average height, and the last 3 kids are all taller than the first 3 kids.
Better knowledge. And, you know, we have less than a minute to go, Dalton Conley. Not time for you to respond to both of those points, but what struck you?
I mean, that's another point that mm-hmm. he brings up, in the fact that economic circumstances in the family are changing as well, for the better or worse sometimes, and that can imprint the kids differently. Yeah.
Very interesting. Thank you very much for being with us. Dalton Conley, author of The Pecking Order. He is also chair of sociology at New York University. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing this program and to Leo Duran for on-air production. Thank you for listening and for calling in. Please stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.